Hi, everyone. I'm Caitlin Yeager. Welcome to the Missouri Humanities Podcast. This is the inaugural episode of Season 2, which will focus on our 2023 signature series, Roots and Routes. Or maybe you say Roots and Roots, the movement and settlement of Missourians. Throughout the year, we'll speak with scholars, authors, and enthusiasts alike to explore what has influenced the movement of people into, out of, and within our state, and take a glance at how both chosen and forced migrations and changes in transportation throughout our state's history have shaped Missouri. To kick off Roots and Routes, I'm joined by Dr. Ness Sandoval, a professor at St. Louis University, director of their Masters of Science in Sociology program, and co-director of the Public and Social Policy PhD program. He specializes in demography, computational spatial statistics and GIS, urban sociology, Latino sociology, and immigration. With such a complex and varied background, Ness was the perfect choice to help set the stage for this year and define a lot of the themes, terms, and issues we'll be exploring. Ness, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. So I think we need to start off with some definitions. I mentioned a lot of potentially jargony terms. Can you help us define terms like demography, urban sociology, and any others you might feel would be helpful to our conversation?
Demography is the term that a lot of people use when talking about the study of people. And it comes from two words, demos and graphen. And demos means characteristics of a population, and graphen means to write about it. And so that's the scientific terminology of demography. What's interesting is that a lot of people talk about demography. We call it population chatter across the United States. And so people may not have a degree in demography, but everybody's talking about demography today, whether it's about politics, changing politics, the changing composition of the U.S., immigration. If you look at the news today, everybody is talking about demography, but they may not be using the term demography. And then urban sociology is the study of society. And so urban is what's happening in urban areas. And so these two fields are connected with each other. Because when we look at the tradition of demography, it's really focused on three demographic transitions: mortality, fertility, and migration. And then based on those three demographic transitions, we're able to look at what happens once a person moves to an urban area. How does that impact fertility? How does that impact mortality? How does that impact migration? And so this is all connected with each other in a larger sequence of demographic transitions.
So, and you dipped into this a little bit, but why do we study subjects like demography and sociology? What can they tell us?
So we want to get a sense of what's happening today with in cities and rural areas, a baseline. But most demographers are interested in trying to understand what a possible future may look like. There's short-term demography, looking at 5-10 years. Then we have long forecasts of 40-50 years of saying this is the potential future of a city, of a state, of a country, based on what we know today. And in the U.S. case, we have fairly stable birth and death rates. So we have a pretty good sense, have pretty sophisticated models that tell us this is probably what the U.S. is going to look like, given that there's no war, or even through this this pandemic of COVID, we were able to develop pretty good models to adjust what the impact is. Mm-hmm. We have a pretty good sense of the change in fertility and mortality, and we adjusted our models. Mm-hmm. So we want to get a sense of how society may change and have some planning in place. Mm-hmm. If a population is getting older, we need to plan for a population that's aging in place. If people are leaving a region, we need to understand that you may not need all those schools if you no longer have a lot of young children in your region. And so so this is why everybody is interested in demography. We have to build roads. We have to rehab apartments. We have to grow food for a population that's growing or declining. So this is why we're interested in this.
That's super interesting, because these are major, major decisions that are based off of these two sciences. And you touched on this a bit, is this, you know, you're looking at these projections 5 to 10 years out, even further out, and assuming policymakers, governments are taking that information and ultimately deciding how that's going to impact their places.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about migration, mm-hmm. Because of the two of the three demographic transitions are biological, mm-hmm. births and deaths. But the third one is based on people's choice to move or not to move. And so we've always had these questions about to what extent should government get involved in providing incentives to encourage people to move to different parts of the U.S. And so there are some states that are just in trouble, demographic trouble. West Virginia is one state. And so the question we've been talking about for the past year is, like, should the federal government be providing incentives to U.S. residents to move to West Virginia? Because right now, people move in a free market type of thinking. There are other types of incentives that come from the free market. But if the federal government got involved and said, hey, you don't have to pay any taxes if you move to West Virginia, mm. how many people would say, I'll take that deal. I'll move to West Virginia, right? But right now, West Virginia is in trouble because more people are dying than are being born. People are leaving. And so as a state, it's got a lot of challenges. Mm-hmm. Does the federal government have a responsibility to get people to move back to West Virginia? And to what extent, if so, what incentives can it provide? And there's other states that we can think about, Ohio, Michigan, where people need to move. People would argue people need to move because the jobs are not being created in some of those cities. And they're being created in Phoenix and Dallas, but people don't want to move. And so where's the incentive to force people to move and saying the jobs just are not coming back? We're not creating these steel plants again. The manufacturing has changed. And so if you want to improve your economic standard of living, you probably need to move to Phoenix, or you need to move to Dallas or Houston. And so how do you encourage people to move where the jobs are being created? And so these are complicated questions. I don't have the answer, but our job is to talk about it, is to begin these discussions of to what extent is it left to the free market, and to what extent should government be intentional mm-hmm. in trying to encourage people to move or to go to other places because it's simply not sustainable.
Well, and it's not an old problem. You know, if you think the entire history of this nation is based off of people moving. Yeah. And, you know, there's many examples of incentivizing, you know, westward movement, northern movement. So it's really interesting to think that, and it's not new, you know, problems never go away. They just kind of change, right? Or, you know, problems, whether or not we label them problems. But thinking about, because I think it's really interesting that you bring up West Virginia, and that demographically speaking, it's not doing well. Have there been other states that have successfully, you know, looked at, you know, hey, we have people moving out and not, you know, this population is longer growing. It's getting smaller, correct? That's basically the problem. Yeah. Have we seen positive change in states where that has been a problem in the past? You know, is there an example?
Well, West Virginia is the first state. So we always say it's the demographic canary in the coal mine. So West Virginia has become Japan. That it's got a natural decline in its population. And so there are some other states that are right behind West Virginia. And so This is relatively new, right? Because we've always, in the United States, there's always been the assumption that every state will have a growing population. And now we know that this is not true. When I was taking my demography classes in the late 80s, early 90s, much of what I'm talking about today was theoretical. Like, this was never going to happen. But here we are in 2023, and it's like, it is happening. What COVID did, it accelerated trends that should have happened in 2030, 2040, and now we're seeing these demographic transitions happening in 2022, 2023. And so many states, cities, we thought we had 15, 20 years, and now we're in a crisis of people moving, more people are dying than are being born now. And then what COVID did, it allowed companies to kind of think about allowing people to work from home. And so the big question now is, well, if you can work from home, you no longer have to move to a city to take that job. And so we're seeing a disconnect between migration and jobs. Mm. Where typically pre-COVID, if you took a job, there was the assumption that you were going to be moving to that city to work. And now, because work can be done in the cloud, you do not necessarily have to move to a city to take the jobs that are being created in these cities. And so this could impact a city like St. Louis that's creating high-tech jobs. But people can decide, I want to stay in Omaha, Nebraska. I don't want to move to St. Louis. I want the St. Louis salary. And they're staying in Omaha, Nebraska, and working just fine. And so we're in this experiment, probably over the next decade, to try to figure out to what extent is migration being disconnected from job relocation.
So where does Missouri fit into this as a state? So we were talking about kind of this interesting shift in migration patterns that, like you said, wasn't anticipated for several more years. But also talking about just general demographics and movement of people. Where does Missouri fit?
So Missouri has some demographic challenges. It's a relatively large state, about over 6 million residents, but it's not growing. And it's not a very diverse state. We think about racial and economic diversity. What COVID did is that it like many states, it now has more people dying than are being born. And so we call this a demographic winter. And it should not have happened. Like, this was not predicted to happen until the 2030s, maybe 2035, but it's happening. It happened immediately. And it just demonstrated how vulnerable Missouri was demographically to a demographic shock. And that's what COVID is, it's a demographic shock. And what it represents, it didn't have a diverse population to respond to this demographic shock. And it's missing a very important component, which is a very large Latino population, which tends to be younger and has higher fertility rates. And so because it's missing this component, it's vulnerable to these shocks. We kind of knew pre-COVID that if you map this by county, there were lots of counties where more people were dying than being born. So we kind of knew that this was the future of Missouri. We didn't really anticipate that how fast that was going to happen to a major metropolitan region like St. Louis, because the region is now in a demographic winter. I think it's about nine people are dying for every birth. That was not the case 10 years ago. Like, you had far more births than deaths. We look at different data sources, and so for the very first time in the history of Missouri, we're starting to see African Americans leave the state, leave the St. Louis region, but also this has implications for the state. And so it is very possible in the next census in 2030, there may be a decline in the African-American population at the state level. I'm not saying that there is the possibility there, because it's that the growth is very, very small. And so this should be concerning. There are some challenges here. The Latinos are coming to the state, but the numbers are just relative to the size of the state are not where they should be for a state that's over 6 million residents. And just to give you a sense, compare it to like a state in Nebraska, they don't have as many Latinos as Missouri, but they're right up there. And Nebraska is a state of about 2 million residents. And so this should be, people should be talking about what's happening and why Latinos are moving to other states at higher numbers and not Missouri. And then what the implication is, if we start to see African Americans continue to leave the state, what this means for the state, and not necessarily 2030, so as a demographer we look out, but 2040, 2050, where Missouri may be in contention again to lose a seat in the House of Representatives. Because you don't have to, you can have a small growing population, but if another state is growing faster, you may be up for, as a candidate, to lose a state representative. So it's not going to happen in 2030, but if nothing changes, Missouri would definitely be in consideration in 2040 and definitely in 2050. If it doesn't happen in 2040, so those are the implications of demography, mm-hmm. that if you don't have a growing population or if it's very stable and you see states like Tennessee and Arizona and Texas continue to grow, those representatives will change. Even though you may not have a declining population, those are just the basic demographic principles that are at play here.
So you bring up one big implication, which I think a lot of people tend to think of when they think of population is representation. Yeah. But on a broader level, why is it so important to note that population is declining or that there's more deaths than there are births? Because we hear about things like overpopulation. We hear that there's too many people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what I'm hearing is that we look at it as a problem, that, you know, when you've got more deaths than there are births, or at least to a higher level than you'd expect. But overall, what does it mean, or what are the other implications to a state that's not growing anymore?
So there are several implications. So as a demographer, we look at age cohorts. Mm-hmm. And so there's always, let me take a step back. So the big question is why? Why are we concerned about this? And so we say one of the big questions related to demography is to the economy. Mm-hmm. And there's always been this assumption that when you have a growing economy, you have a growing population. You have people who are, the population is growing, so you have more consumers. So you're going to need more housing, more Walmarts, more McDonald's. But what happens in the case where you're not growing anymore? Can your economy still grow? Because you don't have the consumers who are there. And so that's the is there a disconnect here? So the question that we kind of think about, the big questions, is 20 years from now, what's the labor market going to look like? Because we know that there are less babies being born today than there were 20 years ago. You're just going to have fewer workers. So companies have to start thinking about, do I need to start automating now? Because I know that the workforce will not be there. And if people are paying attention, this is happening. If you look at McDonald's, they're automating their restaurants. I saw a recent ad for a grocery store in Denver, Colorado, where it's almost automated, where you get the cash register is on the cart. Mm-hmm. And so as you get your food, you scan it in. And so they're removing the cashier altogether. It is happening, because I think there's a recognition that the number of people in the labor market will be declining. Mm-hmm. But we already see this today. So we talked about COVID as the demographic shock. But we had a demographic shock in 2008, which the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. And I think we learned a very valuable lesson. In 2008, things were going great demographically. We were growing, births were kind of up, people were excited, right? The Great Recession happened and everybody was scared. Like, our economy was burning to the ground. And one thing that happened is people stopped having babies. People were not dying, but people stopped having babies. And the assumption was, well, this will be just temporary. Once people have confidence in the economy, they got their jobs back, will we return to the norm? The economy recovered. Demographically, we never recovered. Because fertility rates from 2008 have been declining ever since. There's been a small bump because of the post-COVID, very, very small bump. But the new numbers show a continued decline in fertility. So what does this mean when we look at schools, like if you're in the state of Missouri? Well, you have fewer children today than you did 20 years ago, which means you don't need as many schools. You don't need to build any more schools. Mm-hmm. Or if you're going to build more schools because you're tearing down a school that's not functional. But there's no demand for a new school to be built because schools are overcrowded. And so that's the implication. And that's, we see this in St. Louis, but I think in some of these regions outside of St. Louis, it'll be even greater in 20 years. Like, you have fewer and fewer children in these rural school districts. So there'll be a consolidation because there simply won't be enough children here. So that those are the big implications. If you have an aging population, you have to think about the vulnerability of this age group, because at one point they will leave the labor market. They will need health care. They will need assistance. Who's going to pay for that assistance? And so this is why we're looking to West Virginia, because this is the problem that they have. A lot of young people look at West Virginia and say, I'm out. I'm going to Texas, or I'm going to Virginia, because they can see the crisis above them, that the money that should be spent on innovation and young companies is going to be spent on care for the elderly. And I don't say that's a bad thing. But as a demographer, we have to understand the calculus of why people will decide to move or stay. Many states are going to be following the pattern of West Virginia. And everybody, if you're a demographer, you kind of understood from about 2005 that West Virginia was in trouble. But Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Delaware, they're all in that same pattern. So Missouri's not there yet, but it's, if things do not change, it could be there. In 2050, you could see this very easily, saying, well, why did nobody tell us about this? Well, we are telling you about it, that you got to get, the population in Missouri has to get younger. It needs more people to move to the state. I mean, I'm not even talking about immigration. I'm just thinking you need more Americans, mm-hmm. Mexican Americans, to move to Missouri. Mm-hmm. They're younger. They have more babies. You've got to diversify your population base, because you have a lot of baby boomers who are going to be making the final demographic transition in the next 5 to 15 years.
So I'm glad we kind of started to shift a little bit to bringing people and moving people. But something I want to touch on is that a distinction we want to make with our signature series is that this idea of movement of people into, out of, and then within Missouri, kind of looking at Missouri history up into the present, includes voluntary and involuntary movement. Why is that an important distinction? Can we expand a little bit on what is considered voluntary versus involuntary in Missouri's case and how that can affect things?
So migration is this third part, right? And this is why we say it's not biological. Because people, we would say in the best case scenario, people have the choice to move, right? Mm-hmm. This is your choice to move, or it could be a policy decision and says, well, under these circumstances, I'm going to move or I'm going to stay. But then when you have, in the case of, like, you know, it's not your choice, we're just moving you, then that becomes problematic, right? Because you're going against people's free will. So we would say in today, we would hope that people have a right to move or not. It's your choice. But if you look at the history, right, if you look at people came over as slaves, you could say, well, that was migration. It was forced migration. And then to what extent, once people got freedom, were you able to move? And so there's a lot of history that was written about the Great Migration, mm-hmm. of people moving from the South to northern cities to try to find that American dream. What we're seeing today is a re-migration back to the South, to places like Houston, Atlanta, Orlando, Charlotte, from northern cities. Because in these northern cities, there's great inequality. It's structural inequality. And those types of structural inequalities really do not exist to the magnitude that we see in St. Louis, Detroit, Milwaukee. Like, if you go to Houston, you're like, there's still inequality there, but it's not the type of inequality that you would find in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So migration is really important. It's the most, of all the demographic data we have, it is the most difficult to measure. Because people don't have to tell the government, I'm moving. Mm-hmm. Or we have to kind of estimate, well, how are you moving? We have some pretty good technology today that allows us to estimate with pretty good accuracy of who's moving with cell phone tech, but not everybody has a cell phone, and most people keep their cell phone numbers. And so with this new technology, we have a pretty good sense of who's staying in the region, who's moving to regions. And so so that's talking about what's happening internally to the United States. But we have to think about refugees who are coming to the United States and then immigrants who make the free choice to come to the United States, which are different than refugees. And they have a different set of obstacles to navigate in determining which state that they want to go to, which city they want to go to initially. And so there is a difference between refugees who are coming or who are being sponsored, and then an immigrant who decides, I want to live the American dream, and I want to live it in city X. Mm-hmm. And so there'll be that. And so historically, St. Louis was probably one of the greatest immigrant cities in the United States. If we go back to 1850, 50% of the population in the city of St. Louis was foreign-born. No other major city, New York, San Francisco, did not have those numbers compared to what St. Louis had in 1850. Now, there are some other smaller regions like Milwaukee that were up there. But then we even start to look at St. Charles at that time in 1850, and then on the other side, it was still pretty significant foreign-born population. We were talking like 30%. So the region itself was in many ways, the growth of it was in response to the foreign-born population trying to find the American dream here in the region and in the state. Mm-hmm. Now things changed since 1850, and a variety of things happened. That can partly explain why immigrants started going to Chicago. They started to go to other cities. But the history itself, the roots, it's got a very strong tradition of immigrants coming here. Important businesses that we think of American businesses today were founded by immigrants. And so I think we have to kind of recognize the history of migration to Missouri and to important cities like Kansas City and St. Louis.
And a little bit earlier you brought up refugees. And I think that's an interesting piece of this, because when we think of forced migration such as the slave trade, and then voluntary, like, you know, immigration, someone choosing to move someplace else in search of, you know, historically a better life, the American dream, etc. Where does refugee resettlement fit in? Because you typically don't get to choose where you go. You know, cities sponsor refugees oftentimes.
And they're a little bit different because they're being sponsored, they have a different set of opportunities once they get to a certain city. So let's say St. Louis. They have certain opportunities that allow them to stay in the city, or they can then decide, based on everything I know and based on my network, I'm going to move to Chicago. I'm going to move to Minneapolis. And so, because that's where their community is. So they initially may come to St. Louis, but after 6 months, they may decide that Minneapolis may be the city that they want to settle in. And so so they have a different path. So when we talk about the immigrants who are coming over, we think of those who have legal status and those who don't have legal status. So those who have legal status may be coming over on a work permit, a student visa, where they know, I'm going to be coming to St. Louis to study. And then after they get their studies, they may try to work for a company. So there are different paths that those immigrants can work on. But we do have immigrants who are coming, and this is part of the big debate that's happening over the past 2 to 3 weeks, immigrants who are coming across the border. How do we incorporate them into a pathway towards citizenship in the United States? Mm-hmm. And so that's the policy debate that's happening today in terms of immigration reform. There's a humane way to kind of think about the number of people that are moving just throughout the world. It is demographically speaking, it's right now we're seeing the largest movement of people around the world in our history, because we have famine, we have wars, we have unstable governments, and people want to live a life with dignity, and so they're moving. They're moving all over the world, and so there are implications for the United States, but implications for Missouri in terms of how do we want to reimagine our state. Knowing that we have a state that's getting older, it's not younger. We have more deaths than births. How do we get younger? How do we think about this?
So let's continue on this topic of migration. In your research, in looking at the history of this region of Missouri, what are some of the biggest shifts in migration patterns in and out of Missouri? You know, we talked about COVID a bit. We talked about the demographic shock in 2008. So these are more demographic changes. But as far as people moving, what are some of these shifts that we're seeing both in the past and, you know, what's going on today?
I think one thing that's happening, and it's important to talk about, is that there is a movement to urban areas. And so this is going to impact a state like Missouri, because one can debate what is urban in Missouri, but it's typically Kansas City, St. Louis, Columbia, and maybe Springfield. We could say that these are the urban centers. And so what's happening historically is that people want to improve their economic standard of living. They want access to jobs. They want access to good education. And so one of the transition is, well, I'm going to move to an urban area. So what are the implications here? Young people tend to move. Younger families tend to move. And so you're leaving a population behind. And so in the state, you'll see some of these small towns starting to age. We call these left behind places, because you don't have young people moving to a place that's 5,000 people. They're moving to St. So that's going to be the trend, and that's going to continue to happen. People growing up in rural areas want to move to an urban setting. So this will have implications 20, 30 years from now if it continues. And how do you revert? How do you change this? Right. While immigrants who want the American dream are willing to move to these small towns, about 5,000, 8,000 residents. And so that's the tension for a state of Missouri. Is like, okay, we know that white people probably are not going to move to these small towns, but a Mexican immigrant who wants to start a business is willing to move to these small towns. And we see it in the data itself. And so and immigration is impacted by the creation of jobs. And so a lot of jobs in today's economy are created in the urban areas or the periphery of an urban area. And so people may not be moving to the city of St. Louis, but they're going to be moving to Rensselaer or Warrington because of a new manufacturing company or a meatpacking house coming there. And so, but that's still the urban area. That's still the urban core. And so I think that's one thing that we have to think about in terms of the continuing of people moving to urban cities. We're just becoming a more urbanized country. But this is true happening across the world. Is we look at economic development, it's happening in cities, and we're trying to figure out how do you encourage this in these small rural areas.
Thinking back, you know, when we think of kind of the height of immigration from like Western Europe, like when we think of these immigrant groups that were making up that 30-50% population that Missouri saw in the 1850s, you know, 1800s into 1900s, I feel like we measure them in these big groups. You know, we see big groups of migration, thousands of people moving kind of at the same time. It doesn't seem like we measure it like that anymore. Do we still see massive immigration or migration, or is it more individual families, you know, not seeing as many of one ethnic group or one nation, people of that nation moving?
Our immigration growth is very small. The United States is competing with other countries now. Mm-hmm. And so at one point, everybody wanted to come to the United States. And so we would see these large waves of immigrants. But now there are other countries have a need to rebuild their population base. The United States is in competition to try to encourage the immigrants to move to their country. So we're not going to see, based on our current immigration laws, we're not going to see very large waves of immigrants coming to the United States. It's going to be fairly modest. I don't see anything changing. Even what's happening on the border, unless there's a major change in immigration reform, I don't see that changing a lot. I don't see it. But what has changed is the sending countries of immigrants. And so they're not coming from Western or Eastern Europe, but they're coming from Africa and Asia. And this is changing from, this is an interesting pattern that's changing for Missouri as well. So the largest immigrant group in the United States is the Mexican foreign-born population. There's not even a close second. It's just the largest immigrant group. But in Missouri, the Mexican is still the largest immigrant group. But it's not that large relative to its second largest, which is the Indian foreign-born population. Mm. And in the region like St. Louis, the Indian foreign-born population now outnumbers the Mexican foreign-born population. And so this is demographically kind of interesting because you're like, well, this is unique. Because in most American metropolitan cities, the Mexican foreign-born population is the largest foreign-born population. So you can interpret this a couple different ways, that the Indian foreign-born population is coming to Missouri, and they're coming to St. Louis, which is a good thing. Or you can ask, well, why aren't the Mexican foreign-born population, why are they not coming to Missouri? Mm-hmm. And then what we've seen with the latest data, they're actually leaving. Why are they leaving the region? And what's happening? And so as a demographer, we should think about this clearly because this is not happening to other states and other regions. And so if we look at this 2050 and saying, well, we don't want to lose a House seat, you don't want to lose your African-American population, which you may be losing. You're losing your Mexican foreign-born population, which tends to be citizens. You're going to potentially be losing a white population due to mortality. Those are not the ingredients that you want going into 2050 and saying, our population is of a certain size that we should not be losing a House seat. So these are things that we have to think about as a state. How do we encourage people to come to St. Louis, to Kansas City, to Missouri, to live the American dream? How do we be intentional with this? I think I'm here at a university, and I feel myself to be fortunate because I'm able to interact with students who are not from Missouri or St. Louis. And they offer some very important critiques of Missouri and St. Louis. So I had a student from Charlotte. Charlotte's going to surpass St. Louis in population size in the next 12 months, 12 to 14 months. So we're going to go down to like 22nd largest region in the country. But she shared a story with me when she was applying to schools, and she was telling her classmates about St. Louis University. No one in her classmate had heard of St. Louis, or could not really, like, where is St. Louis at? In their minds, St. Louis was not even an option of cities to go to when thinking about going to school. And that's an important point, because we tend to think, well, everything's great in St. Louis. It's good, it's going. But if you have a young population in Charlotte, when they're looking at schools and it's not even, people don't even know where it's at, that should be a warning call that this is happening to other cities, like Pittsburgh. Like, when I ask my students, who wants to move to Pittsburgh? Nobody will raise their hand. If I ask students, where is Cincinnati? Go to a map and show me where Cincinnati is at. Nobody, I hate to say this, but nobody knows where Cincinnati is at on a map. And so we don't want to become that city, like, well, we know St. Louis, but we don't know where it's at. We don't want to become irrelevant.
I read an interview with you, and I really liked what you said. You said that the goal of your work is to help us understand our spaces, our neighborhoods, and the way we experience them. So what can we learn about our communities, our spaces, our neighborhoods, overall place, through the work that you do, expanding on kind of your inspiration or your reasoning for dedicating your research to these topics?
So I would argue that everybody is a demographic actor. We are all demographic actors, whether we have ever thought this, that, oh, I'm a demographic actor. We make choices. What type of car do we buy? That's a demographic choice. To live in a suburb or in a city. I'm not saying one's better or the other, but that's a demographic choice. To get married or not to get married. To have a child or not to have a child. These are all demographic choices we make. And so my job is to say, here's the data, that the best data that we have. And it's coming in different pieces, like once every 3 months. And we try to triangle it, and we put together a profile, like, This is our city. These are the neighborhoods you live in, and you should get to know them, because these are spaces you're sharing with your neighbors. And so we have this project called Demography for Democracy, is where we want to give you the data, so you can understand and you can have conversations with your neighbors or with the parents at your school, and say, did you know that there are fewer children today than there were 10 years ago? Are we talking about this? Mm-hmm. Or did you know that there are more people 80 years old than there are children five and under? Is that sustainable, right? Or I have a colleague that makes the point that you cannot have a society where you have more people over 100 years old more people over 100 years old than people babies being born. Mm-hmm. That is not sustainable. But that's where we're going. And so we have to understand what it is for neighbors. So when we moved into our neighborhood in Chesterfield, we had young kids. And the very first thing that people would tell us, it's good to have kids in the neighborhood again. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was an odd comment. I'm like, well, what does that mean? It's good to have children. But then I've experienced, like, there are not that many kids in our neighborhood mm-hmm. compared to what it was like maybe 30 years ago, where every house had a child. Now, every house is, not every house, but most of the homes are residents in their 60s and 70s. And so when they see two children standing at the bus stop, like, oh, memories are coming back. I remember when this used to be 20 kids. And it's not just my neighborhood. I talk with people in Webster Groves, and they're like, mm-hmm. the kids are gone. Even though there are children there, but they're thinking about the number of children that were there 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to alarm people saying we don't have any children. we have children in a big metropolitan region of 2.8 million. We'll always have children. But we don't have as many children as we did 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's important is because we see this was the calling card to West Virginia. Like, this was happening to West Virginia 20 years ago. And now it tipped. And it's got not only natural population decline, but overall population decline for the state. And there's really nothing it can do. And so for the state of Missouri, if your birth and deaths are set up to put you on that same path of West Virginia, then your only option is migration. That is really, because you're not, when I talk to people all the time about, well, we'll just have more babies. And then if you start talking about it in reality, like, yeah, we're not going to have more babies, right? Because babies are expensive. Mm-hmm. Even people with health care, when you talk to them about how much they have to pay today compared to 10 years ago. These are people who have health care, and they still have a significant payment that they have to make. And it's getting more and more expensive every year. That solution, although it's there is that solution, like, we'll just have more babies. Well, somebody's got to if we're going to do this, then it has to be subsidized. Mm-hmm. And I don't see anywhere in the state of Missouri where people are willing to subsidize more babies. I'm sorry. even though people want to have more babies, when it comes, like, are we going to give mothers and families money to have more babies, the discussion is very silent. Mm-hmm. So then the other option is migration. We have to encourage more people to come to the state, to find the American dream that they want to live in the state, whether it's in St. Louis, Kansas City, Springfield, Columbia. And it used to be connected to jobs. So we create jobs, and they'll come here. But it's more than just jobs. It's like we want them to envision and reimagine what that American dream could be like in Chesterfield or in St. Charles, whatever the city that they want to live in. That's got to be the element of why this give people this data so they can see these neighborhoods. They can be inspired. Like, this is my neighborhood. This is my city, and I want to see what it looks like 20 years from now. And I can envision it, geographically, demographically. People are talking about this, and people are having these, we call it popular population chatter. You'll have these conversations. I'm like, you're talking about demography. I hope you know, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not going to go away because the Archdiocese is going through a very big realignment of its churches, but its schools, and there's going to be a consolidation of the schools. I'm like, well, why? Why are there going to be fewer schools? What's happening? And I think for a lot of people, that people were just shocked. I think when people realized you have more people who were dying than people who were being baptized. I think that was a shock for many people in the region. Like, this is happening in Cincinnati. it's happening in Detroit. And so this is why we study demography, because we want to, like, we may be studying births and deaths, or if you're a Catholic, you're studying deaths and baptisms, mm-hmm. right? And confirmation, like, to get a sense of what is happening to your institutions, mm-hmm. and what's the implication, not in 2030, but what's the United States look like in 2075? And so I always tell people, when we do some work, and we only look at the U.S. citizens 5 and under. Because, like, that, to me, that's the really interesting part of the United States, is it pretend that everybody over 5 does not exist, and the United States is just made up of 5 and under. What does that population look like? Because that's the population 50 years from now that will be in this office being a professor, mm. will be the CEOs of banks, doctors, lawyers. And it's a very different population compared to the population that's in my cohort or the population that's 60 to 65, because we'll be gone. But that population that's 5 and under, they're the ones that are going to be running the country. And they're very different. And they're the ones that are going to be moving around to different cities. And so we want to get a sense of what this looks like. And so that's demography. It's like, this is one possible future. I'm not saying it has to be the future, but that's one part. So if you want to change your future, these are the actions you need to take as a region, as a state. You need to be intentional, and you need to be, you need to be a fighter. You have to go fight for your state. If you're the governor, you need to fight now. You need to go down to Texas and start fighting for the population to come to Missouri. You need to go to Florida, to Georgia, to North Carolina and saying, I'm going to fight for my state. In the same way you would fight to get a business here, you need to fight to have people and families come to Missouri to live the American dream.
We've touched on, you know, you've spent a lot of time talking about what a potential future of Missouri might look like. Is there anything you feel you're most looking forward to seeing in Missouri, or something that makes you hopeful or optimistic about the people, the sociology, the demography, you know, movement patterns? Is there anything you're hopeful about when it comes to Missouri?
When I look at Missouri and even St. Louis or Kansas City, as a demographer, if I'm able to predict with fairly good accuracy what's going to happen, then that tells me there's nothing really exciting happening in the state. Mm-hmm. So it's not a bad thing. It just says, you're a stable state, mm-hmm. and stability is a good thing. People are, I'd rather be stable than be erratic, right? But when I did the projections for 2020, I was, for the Latino population, I was off by a couple hundred people. And for me, that's not a good thing, because that means that there's nothing that's happening that we can't predict. Now, in other states, I'm like, we didn't predict that. Something's happening there. So as a demographer, I want to be wrong, because I want to see something happening that's not in the model. But if nothing's happening, I'm like, well, you're stable, and we got a pretty good sense of where you're going to be 20 years from now. And if that's where you want to be, that's great. But if we have a model that says there's something happening here and we don't know what it is, then people are going to get excited. And like, what's going on? Why are people moving there? So I'm not from Missouri. I'm not from St. Louis. I actually think that there's a lot of good things happening for the state and from the region, objectively speaking. And it's not about affordability. I think that where people make this mistake is they always say, well, this is, people should move here because it's an affordable place to live. And when you can, if you talk to somebody who's 50, like, maybe that may be the most important question. But when you talk to somebody who's 18, affordability is not even in the top 5 reasons of why they're moving to a city. Pittsburgh's affordable, and nobody's moving to Pittsburgh, right? You have to be able to show people what the American dream is like, what it's like to start a business, to be a an owner of a business, to be able to live in an area that's very green. We have different type of water here. We don't have a lake or an ocean, but we have beautiful rivers. We don't promote this as much as we should. It's a beautiful region to experience the outdoors. We have access to mountains to the south. So not the Rocky Mountains, but they're still mountains. The Ozarks is this gold mine. And we could do a lot better in marketing this and getting people to think about what this means for the state. So I think that there's lots of possibilities here. But other states, we're in competition. Other states are also marketing the American dream. Colorado is marketing the American dream. Dallas is marketing the American dream. Georgia, North Carolina are marketing the American dream. And so if we were just doing this by ourselves, I'm thinking we'll be okay. But we're in competition. And the one thing that I would like to leave your audience with is the population of the United States is slowing down. We're not growing as fast as we once were historically. So this has implications because we kind of realize now that we have maybe 20, 30 years of population growth. I mean, it's going to be very small. So every state, every city is going to be fighting for people to move there. Because it goes back to this big question. How related is population growth to your economy? And if it's highly connected and your population starts to decline, or it's not growing, and you're going to see impacts on your local economy. And this is why we're looking to West Virginia, because we can already see some universities closing, some businesses saying we're closing and leaving. Companies have made the decision not to invest in fiber optics in West Virginia because they're like, it's not worth it. That's a really, to me, that's a bad thing, because it's a state that's already has tremendous inequality. And now companies have looked at West Virginia and saying, we're not going to put fiber optic there. Mm-hmm. Like, this entire generation that stays there is going to be impacted by this. If those decisions continue to be made like that, mm-hmm. So we don't want those decisions to happen to Missouri. Like, we're not going to decide to put a manufacturing base there because the growth is in Arizona. So we're going to move to Arizona. Mm-hmm. So people are looking. Companies have very good demographers, and so they're doing their work. I was listening to a radio program this morning, and I checked the facts. We are now the 24th largest media market in the United States. Durham surpassed us, and so that's a pretty big shock, because people had made the argument that we were going to always be a top 20 media market, but we're not. We're going down, and so these are implications. Like, so why don't we have a football team, a professional football team? Well, part of it's demographics. I know people get upset with me when they say it, but they made a decision. Like, the media market was not the same as it was in Los Angeles, and so those are hard facts to deal with. Well, what does it look like in 2050? Will St. Louis be able to maintain all of its professional teams if the population tops out around 2.85 million? What's the implication here? So these are important consequences that happen. So you say, well, it impacts the state, but it also impacts the region, but it impacts the state, because you're like, well, Kansas City is the only city that has a team now. What does that mean? Because we were finding out, like, St. Louis is no longer in the major studies, because they typically, to be in a lot of these major studies, you have to have a football team. Wow. And because we're not, if you don't have that team, we're out. Even though we're a major city, 2.8 million, we're out, because we're not a football city anymore.
Wow.
And I don't think people really truly understood what that meant economically when you're not when you're not invited to the party because you don't have a football team. And so this is all related to demographics. Like if we could have demonstrated that instead of 2.8 million, we would have been 3.5 million, that would have been hard evidence that said it can support a team like that. Now, whether the decision was already going to happen or not is different, but demographically, I'm like, I would have made the same decision, mm-hmm. demographically. I know people get upset with me, but I'm like, you got to think about the media market. You got to think about making money. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more money to be made in Los Angeles than there is in St. Louis.
So what makes you hopeful?
I think you have a younger population. The city itself, and I try to tell people this, again, I'm not from the city, I'm not from the region. You have to have a successful city in order to have a successful region. And so I see a lot of younger people get this. Like, we need St. Louis City to succeed if the region's going to succeed, because it is the major city of the region. If you were to tell people Clayton, Missouri, on the East Coast, nobody could point out where Clayton, Missouri is. But they kind of get a sense like, well, we know St. Louis. We know that's the principal city of the region. So it has to succeed. So I'm hopeful that the Central Corridor is succeeding. A tremendous amount of investment's happening here. But we need to think about the institutional inequality in the city. I think a younger population kind of understands that it has to address these issues. If you look at some of the suburbs, these are some of the most important suburbs in Missouri, in St. Louis. And people get upset when I say this, but Chesterfield is probably the most important suburb in the state. Maybe Maryland Heights in Chesterfield, because of the demographic changes that are happening in that 270 corridor with the Indian foreign-born population. When you look at the diversity in the Parkway School District, Rockwood School District, I would put that, especially 5 and under, again, we're looking at the 5 and under, I would put those school districts up with the school district in Houston and Chicago and saying, we can compete. Not the entire region, but those school districts. There's something exciting happening in those school districts. It is our United Nations of the region. And we should embrace it. We should be proud of what's happening there. Chesterfield and Maryland Heights are things that we need to look at in 10 years from now and realize these suburbs are just as important as Naperville or Aurora are to Chicago in terms of what's happening. And Chesterfield could surpass, it's got the fourth largest immigrant population in the state. It could be number three. There's that possibility of it being the third largest immigrant. And so people's like, not Chesterfield. And they're like, you're talking about Chesterfield, right? I'm like, yeah, Chesterfield. It's got the fourth largest immigrant population in the state. And it could be number three. And then people are like, I don't believe you. And then I show the numbers and like, oh my gosh, this is not the Chesterfield from 1950 that we think about. And so that's what I'm hopeful about, that I think that people understand, like, we want Chesterfield to be the third largest. I'm thinking we as a region, we want Chesterfield to be the third largest region. And to get there, Chesterfield needs to make sure that the city itself is doing good. We need to work together in cohesion. And so that's my hope that we do this. But it doesn't have a history, right? The history is not there. There is a divide between the city and the suburbs. And there's a divide between suburbs and suburbs. Mm-hmm. I'm not used to this. I've lived in many metropolitan regions in the U.S., and I've never experienced the amount of divisionists that's here in St. Louis in any of the regions I've lived in. I mean, I meet people who are actively rooting against the suburbs, and I meet people in the suburbs who are actively rooting against the city. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I've never seen this. In my experience of living in Chicago, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., I've never experienced this. So as a demographer, I'm like, we have to grow. We have to be positive. Maybe just living in the San Francisco Bay Area, it was like we're all together, and I was used to that. We're a region. We're not these municipalities. So that's what I'm hopeful for. But we have to be. I also have to say I'm a demographer, and so I have to be. In the end, I have to be honest with the facts that we know today, mm-hmm. and there are some demographic hurdles for the region and for the state. And the hurdles are getting higher and higher. And so if they get too high, we're not gonna overcome these. And then we'll have to think about, okay, what's plan B? Mm-hmm. What's plan B for Missouri? Because we do have some comparisons. We have Tennessee, we have Oklahoma, Nebraska. I'm like, okay, what's going on in these other states? What's going on in Charlotte, Nashville, Austin, Sacramento, San Antonio? So we always, as a demographer, we study St. Louis, we study the state, but it's always in comparison to something. Mm-hmm. And so we have our peer cities that we look at. And so we want to say, what's happening there? Why are people moving there?
Well, Dr. Ness Sandoval, thank you for taking the time with us, for helping us really set the stage for Roots and Routes. You introduced us to a lot of key concepts. You really, I think, painted an interesting picture of not just the history of Missouri, but where we are today and what a potential future might be. So I'm excited to continue exploring this theme throughout the year. And again, thank you for helping us set the stage. Best of luck with your work. And it's no small task. I'm sure it's something that can be stressful at times. So I'm sure I speak for a lot of people when I say thank you for doing what you do.
Well, thank you very much. It was an enjoyment.
That's a wrap on our inaugural episode of the Roots and Routes podcast. Thanks again to Dr. Ness Sandoval and to all of you listening for joining us. We hope you found this conversation helpful to set us in motion for season 2 and that it intrigued you enough to come back for more. This podcast is brought to you by Missouri Humanities. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a rating and stay engaged by following us on social media at @MoHumanities. For more about our 2023 signature series, visit mohumanities.org/movement. I'm Caitlin Yeager. Join us next time as we explore more about the roots and routes of Missourians.